You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
You know, while you're driving or listening to this, just think, okay, how big is a blue whale in your head? Just for a second, think, okay.
What can they teach us?
They are the biggest animal to ever live, but they're also the loudest.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. And so they...
Many species are in crisis and need your help. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Angie, I'm so excited today. Again, like, I'm excited every day thinking about this stuff, but I'm like giddy because I got to pick this one.
Yes, no, and I'm giddy for you, but then once I dived into the research, I found myself just mesmerized and unable to shut down my computer. And this, I probably have the longest notes I've ever had for any of the species that we covered, which makes sense. I have the longest and biggest notes that I've ever had because today we are covering
is the largest mammal in the world and the largest animal ever to live in the world.
Ever on Earth.
Yeah. The history, mm-hmm. The blue whale. Like, I just am so excited to cover these guys.
The blue whale, I think... I've known for a long time that it was the largest mammal on Earth, but I didn't realize that it's the largest animal or mammal or thing that's ever been. I didn't realize that it was bigger than the Brachiosaurus and some of these dinosaurs.
Right.
That was news to me, and it's...
I would have thought some underwater dinosaur might have been bigger.
Exactly.
But no, we have not found anything as big as a blue whale.
And the great news is it's still here. It's alive.
I know. It's alive. It's alive.
Yes.
So,
yes. No.
Another cetacean. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another cetacean.
Yeah. No, it's another cetacean.
You want to stay tuned because this time I actually interviewed an expert before we recorded our episode. So throughout, I'm going to have some little snippets from Dr. Kim Goetz down here in New Zealand, who's doing blue whale research. Her interview.
Yay.
Yeah, it was a great interview. We're going to release that in a couple days. She gave so many insane insights on blue whales and marine conservation. So, you know, stay tuned. I'll give you some more details towards the end of the pod about that for Thursday. But yeah, it's really, really exciting. So Angie, the first thing about blue whales, they're baleen whales, right?
Yes, baleen. And that has to do with how they get their food.
Right. So they're like filter feeders, like the whale shark. Just these things are so, I mean, whale sharks are massive, but these things are huge, huge.
Yes.
And then what's really cool about the Angie, is not only is this the largest animal in the world, but it eats some of the tiniest animals in the sea, the krill.
Right. Some little crustaceans that you and I would probably enjoy. Eating.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, how in the heck do these things sustain themselves?
I know, but, well, they eat a lot. They eat a lot. We'll have some statistics in a little while about how much they eat to be as large as they are. But, Chris, how big are they?
Yeah. So, for the listeners, I'm like, you know, while you're driving or listening to this, just think, okay, how big is a blue whale in your head? Just for a second, think, okay, if you don't know, guess. Give you a second. Okay. They're as long as a 10-story building. Mm-hmm. So roughly 100 feet or up to 32 meters. Mm-hmm. Like, That is two and a half buses.
That is a Boeing 737, more or less.
Yes.
Which is a big airplane, not the little puddle jumpers
big airplane.
I fly in all the time.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I mean, that's impressive, right? So that to me is impressive. But what really got me was the weight. So if somebody out there, if you could guess how many tons these guys weigh, it's insane. It's insane. I'll give you a hint. 40 elephants worth of weight. So that equates to 220 U.S. tons or 440,000 pounds or 200,000 kilograms. Like, insane. Insane.
It's incredible. And honestly, though, it's my understanding that these weights are really, really good guesstimates, too, because...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. What's the last time you had a blue whale on a scale?
Yeah, and what kind of scale? A lot of it's from when they were, you know, if one washed up and then they would do piecemeal. And so there's, but if mm-hmm. one had washed up to shore, it's probably not its full weight because it's been dehydrated or out in the sun. And so even if they measured parts of the body, they're still... Right. Probably underestimating it.
Right. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. And so when I was looking at kind of the sizes and looking this up, I first wanted to see, okay, how big's a krill? Mm-hmm. And it's about 2 inches or the size of a paperclip.
Mm, wow.
So here you have this 220 ton animal eating a bunch of little crustaceans that are the size of a paperclip. Just crazy. It's crazy. So in looking at the sizes too, before we jump into more of a bigger description of them, you know, I was like, okay, you know, they say the largest animal ever. So what are some things that are comparable? One thing we talked about with the whale sharks was Megalodon. Mm-hmm. Now, Megalodon could probably take down a blue. I know they could, but Megalodon was about 60 feet long. Okay. So still half the size, roughly a little bit over half the size of a blue whale. So then I'm like, okay, what about dinosaurs? You know, you go back to dinos. Yeah. They think the biggest dinosaur ever was Argentinosaurus.
That is right. See, this is where I need my four-year-old because he knew that fact. I could only quickly come up with Brachiosaurus, and I thought I was doing pretty good. I forgot about that that one.
Yeah.
Argentinosaurus, or however you say it.
Xander's brilliant, our future paleontologist. So Argentinosaurus might be a little bit longer. They thought of about 37 meters or 122 feet. But that's from nose to tail. So they had really long tails. Mm-hmm. Right. So the weight was nowhere near.
No.
About half the weight of a blue whale. And really, so why do blue whales, how can they get so big? Well, they live in the ocean. So the buoyancy, that allows them to get that massive
weight. Yeah, if
you
think of elephants, they have to stand on their four legs. And so there's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. And land mammals, because of the weight, are confined to how big they potentially can get, or the dinosaurs too. There was a max out where with a buoyant animal, and especially an animal that has access to large surpluses of food, such as the krill when they come into season and there's blooms of them, so just tons and tons of them, all-you-can-eat krill buffet or small crustacean buffet, they were able to get very big.
Right. Now, a little bit on, you know, everybody knows a blue whale, okay, it's blue and it's a whale, right? So they can kind of do that, but.
Well, when is they it actually surface, blue, yeah. though? Is
yeah, no, it's a good blue? Question. Yeah, they're really not. It just looks blue underwater, right?
Sure.
So when they surface, their skin's more of a mottled gray.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of.
And the lower sides are a little bit white in color, if you will.
Yeah. And then they said that they kind of turn yellow. Because of microorganisms, I was like, oh, maybe he needs a bath. But they have those longitudinal folds from, you know, I guess the nose all the way down to their tails. So those folds underneath. And so they get some microorganisms in there.
We that all got some microorganisms yellow. In our folds, Chris.
Yeah. You don't want to know, people.
I'm sitting here with my bare feet right now being like, what's in what's in the folds of these toes?
Oh, God, Andy.
I live in Florida now. It's a thing. It's called swamp feet. It happens.
Oh, man. Yeah. In New Zealand, nobody wears shoes. That's the one thing. It's hilarious.
So there you go. There's more micro. I saw that in the grocery stores, right?
Yeah.
No shit. So silly. So you guys definitely have more toe microorganisms than we do here in swampy Florida.
God, I don't want to think about it. Oh, make someone throw up. Okay. Yeah. So they don't wear shoes around here. It's bizarre. Like, it was pouring raining the other day. It was colder. And this guy's in shorts and a t-shirt walking around down the street bare feet. I'm just like, oh, New Zealand, I gotta love you.
Bless his heart. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. New Zealand's awesome. So yeah.
Back
so
to whales.
Yeah. Back to the blue whales and the microorganisms. So what's really, you know, people, you know, they want to look at a picture, but they have this really broad, flat head. It's really kind of bizarre.
Well, and for me too, studying these pictures of these guys and videos of what's out there is, compared to other whales or what I picture, I've been blessed enough out in Hawaii to watch the humpback migration and watch them breach. And I'm used to more of like a round body. The blue whale is actually very long and slender. Compared to the other whales. There's all these amazing pictures, of course, which is, you guys know me. I get distracted, easily distracted when I'm looking at animal pics and videos. But there's really neat pictures of them underwater with like a boat on top, a small boat to show you just the size difference.
Right.
But they look like long torpedoes almost. I mean, they're very long, very long, obviously, and slender.
Yeah. Which would probably, you know, for energy conservation, you know, we get into the physiology of it all, you know, so they're not these big, they're just long. They're huge. They're just huge.
Well, and speaking of their size, do you know their heart? Okay. Obviously they're going to have a large heart to pump blood through that large body.
Right. Right.
Can you guess how much it weighs?
Oh, geez. Let me see. 400 or 500 pounds.
I don't know. You're pretty darn good. About 400 pounds. And it's the largest known.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Star for you, Chris. Good job.
I didn't even look that up.
That's 400, that's insane. I mean, that's just, it's the largest of any known animal. And
so this means you have to start calling me Dr. Chris. Sorry.
I'll
so
call you
good.
Dr. Chris. Yeah, that was good. Okay, I've got one for you.
Okay.
How about their flippers, right? They're whales, so they have flippers. How long are they?
6 feet. That's how tall I am. 6'5".
And I guess I have to keep calling you Chris. Rongo bongo. I love it when my
feet?
Old boss
pretty...
is wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Longer.
What?
Yeah, you did Price is Right rules, so.
Higher.
Nine and a half to 13 feet.
Wow. Wow.
Or 3 to 4 meters for the metric
system.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's crazy,
but
though.
Think,
yeah.
Like, look in your room.
I am. That's what I was doing,
to your ceiling. To your ceiling. And that is one of their flippers' lengths.
That's crazy. Because, I mean, yeah, they're, it's a tenth of the size of, that's nuts. That's nuts. Yeah. So their head though, I mean, their head's pretty weird looking too. Like the way I was kind of describing it, and again, Angie and I are trying to do the best we can. You know, the mouth is like the top third of their head and then the bottom portion's 2/3. And when we get to their feeding behavior, that's kind of important because they really enlarge that mouth and scoop when they feed. And then they have the flat flukes, you know, where whale sharks, it's up and down. These are flat and they're kind of triangular. So anyways, yeah, this blue whale that's actually mottled gray and super big. There's your description, folks.
And very majestic. Very majestic when moving through the water. Or and now there's all this, we'll talk more in a little bit, but there's all these drone footage of them.
Oh, yeah.
So you can get, there's nice aerial shots if you look around
which
on the internet.
Which is crazy. And I meant to ask that in my interview, but it was going so long anyways, I didn't get to it with Dr. Goetz. But maybe when I do talk to her again, I'll ask her about using drones, but her blue whale research that she's doing. I can't imagine flying those things over water because I stink at flying my own drone that I had.
I've never tried, but I wouldn't be good.
It might goes in like the trees. I'm lucky I find it. I couldn't imagine
I would be even worse. Like me driving a car the first 5 to 8 years was was bad enough.
Yeah, when you come down here, you're not driving in New Zealand. Not
letting
you.
Oh gosh, no. When I've been overseas, the road. Yeah, I've always let my friends do that when I'm with them because it's It's safety first, right?
Yeah, yeah. So blue whales live all over the world. Again,
they do. I love to click on the interactive map to show where the species live on the IUCN webpage, and this one covered all the oceans.
Right. Yep. Only places you don't find them is the Mediterranean, which is interesting. You know, maybe they just don't go through the Straits of Gibraltar to get in there, so they don't find them.
They're too darn big. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Can't back up the bus, right?
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
This was curious too, is they don't really find them in the Arctic or the Bering Sea. You know, but we find them all over down here. You know, all over the Antarctic.
Well, that's why I got really excited for you. A lot of the research that I was looking up is from Australia or some in New Zealand.
New Zealand.
You can definitely do some sightseeing, so you'll have to put that on the bucket list for sure.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, definitely. I'm going to try to get on Dr. Goetz's boat. I'm working an angle there, so I'm going to go out and help her tag whales. Yeah. All right, so the different subspecies of blue whale. The overall species name is Baleno terra musculus. That's pretty easy. That was an easy one.
Good job.
And so the four subspecies generally that are accepted, the Antarctic or the true blue whale is what they call them.
I like that true blue.
Yeah, I know. True blue whale. Maybe because they are kind of blue. I don't know. And then they have the pygmy blue whale. Now, when I first heard that, I was like, Dr. Goetz was talking about that. I was like, are they small? You know, like the pygmy sperm whale? But
sure.
No, they're not.
Oh, they're not?
Yeah, they're not. No, they can get up to 80 feet long. Yeah.
Oh, that's not what I was expecting. I didn't do a lot of research on the pygmy. I just assumed. See?
No.
That's what happens when you assume. It makes a you-know-what out of you and me.
Yep. No, and then so like Dr. Goetz was talking about their range. They don't go as far south as the Antarctic blues, so they don't go down to Antarctica. But they're off the coast of New Zealand. So
where
that's
are they called
kind of
pygmy then? What?
They're not as big.
Gotcha. Okay, but they're not so small.
No. They're pretty big. And then in the northern hemisphere, you have two subspecies. You have the North Atlantic and the North Pacific. So they kind of stay isolated in their parts of the world. They really don't cross the equator. Probably because, you know, it just, there's not their food sources around there, you know, where it's too warm. And, you know, interesting, it was like whale sharks. I was thinking about this. The land separates the northern population, and especially since they don't go near the sea ice and things like that at the North Pole. So that's kind of why they've done that. And they've done that with genetics, right? So kind of isolated them. Now, the conservation, again, very important. Blue whales are endangered. We'll get more of this later in the pod. But, yeah, they've been decimated.
Sure, yeah. Chris, the blue whales were, all the subspecies were very abundant in the oceans until the beginning of the 20th century. And then they were pretty much almost hunted to extinction by the whaling industry. But luckily, with a lot of international collaborations, efforts, scientists, researchers, probably just whale enthusiasts in general, in 1966, so not too long ago, probably closer to when you were born.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Moving on.
Just teasing. So in 1966, the International Whaling Commission made it illegal to hunt blue whales. And there was some people in some areas that didn't necessarily comply, primarily in the Soviet Union. But around 1970, they started shaping up.
And so
by the time this whaling ban came into effect, for instance, the Antarctic population had been reduced to only 360 individuals.
Yeah, Dr. Goetz told
approximately.
Yeah, she said that the Soviet whaling industry knocked them down to 1% of their total population. 1%.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the good news, spoiler alert, there is really good news that we'll be reporting today, is that populations are increasing. They're a lot. I normally say decreasing, but they... Overall, the past 40, 50 years, they are increasing. It's just that they're definitely nowhere near
where they were
sustainable. And they're nowhere near where they were pre-whaling, to what they naturally would be without man decimating the population. So But yeah, so I mean, there's good news, and with the blue whale, I think you can probably speak on behalf of the scientists you spoke to, but I think cautiously optimistic.
Yes,
if we do certain things right, they'll be around for our great grandkids. If we don't pay attention, health and our climate health, that they probably will go away.
Right.
So
yeah, and I don't want to give away too many spoilers on the interview, but I mean, there's so much cool stuff that we talked about, so I won't.
I know, I haven't heard it yet. I'm like, I don't. Yeah. I hate wishing away days, but I kind of wish it was Thursday.
I know, it was really great. She's so brilliant. Just, you know, it's funny. I was conservation crushes. You talk about Leonardo. I'm like, I'm getting crushes. I mean, don't let my wife listen to this, but I'm getting crushes on these all these conservation experts, like Allison. I was like, it's so heaven talking to her, listening to her talk about rhinos. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Like, don't tell her, but I have like a huge crush on her now. And now Dr. Goetz, hopefully she doesn't listen to this.
She'll never find out. I was gonna say. Conservation crushes are totally healthy and normal, Chris. At least that's what I tell myself.
Okay. Oh, man. Thank God Ashley doesn't listen to this. She doesn't like listen to her. Anyways, I'm not going there.
John doesn't listen either, but it's only because he doesn't have time. I mean, he's a busy man. He'll listen someday.
Somebody's got to make money, right? You and I just do this.
I know, right?
Yeah, so the interview with Dr. Goetz, I was just like, again, like Allison in heaven listening and talking to her. And so she was talking a lot about – what made it really interesting too is we did kind of some broader issues with marine conservation and the health of the oceans, which is just so scary, you know, especially with the plastics, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think – I always ask myself – for my listeners' sake, why care? Why should the average person who maybe doesn't see a blue whale or is not a scientist working on the blue whale conservation, why should they care? And there's the obvious that they're the largest animal to ever be on Earth, and the size, which I was really enamored with, to the point where I spent probably an hour of my life that I'll never get back just trying to find locations where I could take the boys this summer to see an intact skeleton or a replica. So I will save the listeners some time, and just if you are interested in potentially getting up close and personal for these size comparisons, Chris and I are definitely not doing justice on over the air, but first and foremost, there's the American Museum of Natural History in New York. They have a fiberglass replica that you can walk under. So I've never been to that museum. It's on my
bucket list. It is one of my all-time favorite. I didn't know if it was a blue whale because it's been years since I've been. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I love it. They have Lucy, you know, who's like really famous.
Oh, I really want to go. I might try to go this summer when we visit family in Boston. Yeah. And in the far, far West Coast, there's a really nice replica. I think it might actually be the real deal in London in the Museum of Natural History. They have a new exhibit in 2017 that opened up, and her name is Hope, is what they at least call the skeleton. I don't know when I'll be going to London, but also in the States, on the West Coast, the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History has one, and out of Santa Cruz, the Seymour Marine Discovery Center. So your stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, there's definitely some places, and there's more. I just couldn't find them all online. So if any of the listeners know, if there's any place closer to Florida where I can go stand under a blue whale with my boys, let me know. I think so the size, just the sheer size and all these fun facts that we're saying is, if that's not reason enough to care about them, I think it's responsibility about their intelligence and their curiosity. It's just drawn people to them. And I are great examples of that, and the research scientists that you interviewed. And so, but because of that, part of one of the bigger conservation issues is the ocean health with the whales. And recently, I think just this past week, I'm not sure if your news feed was bombarded with it, but there was a sperm whale, so not a blue whale, so smaller than a blue whale, but a sperm whale had washed up onto a beach in Spain that had 64 pounds of plastic waste in its stomach.
I know. Maybe sick.
So, I mean, I think that's it's just indicative of what's going on with our oceans.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just, it's a wake up call. And of course, people that study the study whales and other marine life are aware of these problems. And I think the public is starting to become more aware. And so I think that if anything, we need to use them as a canary in the coal mine, the sperm whale, for instance. Let's not let his life be in vain. Let's work on this plastic stuff and reducing plastic. And I'll have a little bit more on the podcast later if there's time for me to go into my no plastic or reduce plastic harangue. Hopefully I'll stick around
for
that.
It is. It's really important.
But I do think, Chris, too, that recently some big ballers in the game are starting to take notice. And people are voting with their dollars, and people are becoming more vocal, and people don't want to see things like this happen to a sperm whale or any animal, for that instance. And so, for instance, McDonald's is phasing out straws in the UK, in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, that's really good.
Huge. They're going back to I should say that they're phasing out plastic straws. They are going to use paper straws instead. And so I was I'm like, this is amazing. I don't usually go to McDonald's, but I'm gonna go have a Shamrock Shake or something out of a paper straw. I was super stoked about it. But then I kept reading and I found out that the United States has not taken that same plunge
stance.
Yet. The McDonald's in the United States, if you're out there listening, or people, encourage the United States to follow what the UK is trying to do. I think that would be great. And then, for instance, too, just last week, Starbucks announced a $10 million challenge for the creation of a fully compostable paper coffee cup. So they use a lot of paper, but they're looking for a paper that has no plastic liner in it that can be completely fully compostable. So shout out to them for doing that. So I think hopefully we're going to see more of that kind of thing in the future. But in the interim, there's different things you can do. And I'm all anti-straw. I carry a metal straw in my purse. And otherwise, I just say no straw. And then the other thing you can do is there's on Facebook, there's this really cool group called The Last Plastic Straw. And check them out, man. They just have like a movement going, and they're trying to remove plastic straws because they obviously end up in the waste, in our waste stream and oceans and beaches. And you can take like a pledge to do that, and there's no money involved. There's no commitment involved.
Right.
Just check them out. Yeah. The Last Plastic Straw. Yeah. I went ahead and liked them on Facebook, and groups like that encourage us to think outside of our box and challenge us to be better.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's just changing habits too, right? We just have habits, and it's like we really got to commit ourselves and, you know, make healthy habits and for the environment and for ourselves too, right? So, you know, last pod we talked about reducing meat consumption and how that has an effect on the rainforest with all the cattle ranching. If you just start saying, okay, I need to eat less meat, you crave less of it, and now you're eating smaller portions of it. With plastics, it's like, okay, make an effort to reduce plastic consumption. You start developing those habits, and then pretty soon, second nature, like, oh, no, thank you. Just trying to reduce my plastic.
I have a little joke at the grocery store you guys can borrow from me when they try to give me plastic. Of course, we all forget our bags. We're human. Mm-hmm. I forget my bags probably one out of six times. And then when they offer me plastic, I always joke and I say, oh, no, thanks. I'm trying to save a tree. And they all look at me kind of weird. And then they laugh because obviously plastic doesn't come from trees and all of that.
But
it's just my kind of lighthearted, you know me, I'm a funny girl, kind of way to lighten things up and show them that it's fun and it's funny and cool to be, to not use plastic or not use plastic bags. And so,
It's picking up steam. It's picking up steam.
Yeah.
All right, back to blue whales. Let's get back to blue whales. But it's so critical. The plastic's just like it's a constant theme that you and I are running across, right? It's just constant, constant. Anything we talk about the oceans is plastic and global warming. So the blue whales can live up to 110 years old. Now, How do they know that, Angie? They don't have a driver's license or something. What do you think?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Rings of a tree?
Yeah, no.
Okay. It is like that, though. They actually determine the age of whales. Are you ready for this one?
I'm so excited.
Talking about Nike nasty toes. And they determine it by earwax.
What? No way. Yes. I was waiting for like rings on their beanie or carbon dating.
No. Yeah, no, it is the earwax in the ear. As the animal ages, they have these earplugs to protect their inner ears, and it's layered. So it is almost like a tree ring. And I have this nasty picture of an earplug that it's not nasty, it's just, anyways, but it has like little grooves in it that they can count.
Awesome. And so let me see that picture.
They're able
turn
to
turn the camera around. Let me see that picture.
Can you see it?
Oh. Nasty and interesting.
You see the grooves?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see the grooves.
It's making me want a Q-tip, though, right now, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. Anything with earwax, like, just gross. But, form and function, right? You know, so they were able to find a blue whale and count the rings.
Like,
the
what graduate student was doing that? They were like, man, I don't want to study whale earwax. And then they made, like, the coolest discovery ever.
Like, yeah, it was like that Titana Bow story I talked about, the grad student. It was like, so on average, though, the blue whale lives about 80 to 90 in the wild. And what we covered in the other pod, the bowhead whales, they thought they can live up to 200. So pretty crazy. Now, males are bulls, females are cows, babies are calves, a group is a pod. Mm-hmm. And, you know, very similar life cycle. Now, what's really, I know you and I are just like itching to get to this stuff too, is their physical traits. Like, just amazing physiology.
Oh, the physiology 101 on whales is incredible. I didn't even have time to read all of it because the adaptations to be a mammal in the ocean and able to eat lots of tiny crustaceans and dive deep. Those facts alone are just, nature's incredible. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It is. Biology's awesome. The blue whales and most whales and cetaceans, the internal organs are just like any other mammal. It's just, they don't have hips or legs, right? So those have evolved away. The rostrum, just starting with the blue whale, has a unique one. They actually is like U-shaped and they have two separate blowholes. So you talked about how their hearts are being so big. Get this fact, Angie. You can hear their heartbeats from 2 miles away underwater.
Wow. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. That's insane.
Like could hear it or another animal. Like me, Angie.
You could hear it from like, you know, if you have your underwater acoustic thing, you know, listening.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want that. I want that experience.
So, you know, I want to blow your mind because one of the things I asked myself was how these animals can stay underwater for so long. First thing is their lungs are smaller compared to us body weight wise, which doesn't make sense, really.
Yeah.
So for humans, we're about 7% body weight as lungs. For a blue whale, it's 3%, which is not much compared to their size. Now, blue whales can stay underwater for 20 minutes. Sperm whales can go 90 minutes to 2 hours. Like,
that's insane.
Like even when you dive, you don't dive for more than an hour. You know, you have an hour's worth of air in your single tank. So that's just nuts. So how do they do this? Like, how can they survive at those depths and
be able to breathe? A big breath. They must be taking a big breath when they do surface.
Right. So without getting too much into physiology, you know, your muscles are working, your organs are working, you need oxygen, right? Oxygen for the cells. You know, we all know that from cell biology. Not all, you know, people that study this stuff. So a couple of the cool things that whales have that we don't. First, they have 2 times the amount of hemoglobin in their blood. And that's important because hemoglobin is what binds oxygen. So when we breathe, we absorb oxygen and our hemoglobin binds it and it carries it around the body and feeds our cells oxygen. Well, whales have 2 times the amount of that in their blood. Then there's a thing called myoglobin, which is a protein that binds oxygen in muscles. Because as your muscles work, they become oxygen starved. And that's why, like, when people, like, say when you go run, you know, or go up a flight of stairs, Angie, like five stairs, you're like,
not you. I was going to say, you better be talking about yourself. I just did a 5K this past week, and I beat all the 21-year-olds. Did you? It was awesome. Yeah. Now, they weren't super in shape, but I'll take a win when I get
one. I know. You do kick butt on the stairs. That's why I say, like, you go run stairs at the stadium.
I do.
I could go up five steps, maybe six would make me start breathing fast. But when anybody goes out and exercises, you start breathing because your body's starved for oxygen, right? So this was just recently discovered the last 5 years. Whales have nonstick myoglobin, so those proteins are more efficient. They store more oxygen in their muscles. There's actually a big push, again, how whales can benefit humans for people, you know, looking at the molecular mechanisms of this. When you have accidents, people that, you know, have injuries, that there's less blood supply, maybe there's something they can give to make the, and save organs and things like that. Right. So there definitely has. Yeah. It was really cool reading this.
Well, and when I was looking into some of their physiology for how they can hold their breath and how they can dive so deep, we know certain things, as you had mentioned about the hemoglobin, the myoglobin, and they actually, they have a larger lung capacity, and the fact that us humans fill our lungs about 20% when we take a deep breath, whereas a blue whale, they can fill their lungs up to 90%. So they can
use more of it.
They can use more of it. But a lot of things, what the research keeps coming back to, is there's still so many things we don't know about how they have this adaptation. And as we learn more, or if we are able to learn more about it, there's probably potentially some medical insights or other, just get benefits from them. So, because their ability to dive deep I was also really impressed with that. And touch on a few parts of that, for those of you that are familiar with scuba diving, know that we can only go, as humans, we can only go so deep, where otherwise the pressure, the weight of the ocean, for lack of better terms, above us would crush us. And then, of course, when you come up after scuba diving, you have to come up slowly to release the pressure, so you don't get the buildup of nitrogen, which can cause issues such as the bends. And blue whales dive deep comparatively, so they go about 500 meters when they're feeding during different dives. And so they have a lot of different adaptations to be able to accommodate the pressure and also to not get the bends. They have their lungs will flatten as they dive down, but their ribs don't break because their ribs are a lot more flexible than ours. I guess in humans, the pressure would cause our ribs to break. And there's just there's some really cool physiological adaptations that we can maybe put in the show notes. So you guys can be as I was reading about it, I'm just like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Physiology is,
there's so many things. I mean, it was like one of the things I learned too is when they surface, they exhale first and then they inhale.
See, that's so great. I mean, what?
Yeah. And then I know I have it here somewhere. The blue whale, that spray that comes out, so that it goes up to 30 feet.
Whoa. That's
33 stories. That's insane. But they exhale.
Wow. I mean,
I want, let's get through nutrition quick, because I really want to get to the behavior.
Chris,
and
I don't know how quick it's going to be honest with you, because we'll make it quick. But the other really, one of the adaptations I was most fascinated with their nutrition is just how they feed. So just to touch on the baleen, which is a terminology for the filter feeding system, also the type of whale they are, inside the mouth of blue whales. Because it's just so fascinating. And it's basically, it's a filter like it sounds like. What it does is when they engulf a whole bunch of water with obviously their target prey. So as they open their mouth very wide and engulf things such as krill or small fish, sometimes even birds, but mostly krill.
Poor bird.
a bird here and there. The baleen, the filter feeding system that hangs from the top, is, I almost want to describe it as like a fingernail. Right. It's made of keratin. Yeah. Once again, we always talk about keratin, that hangs from their mouth in a plate-like form. Mm-hmm. So it's not, but it's not a tooth. It's almost like, it's described as like a bristles.
Right.
Brush,
yeah. Yeah.
Is a good, is a nice way to describe it. That as the fish passes through there and the whale closes its lower jaw, it squeezes, it uses its tongue to help spoosh the water out, and the krill get trapped in this filter feeding system. But what I was fascinated by is the length of each one of these baleen, or each one of these keratin, fingernail, bristle brush things that hang from the top of the blue whale's mouth. Is in blue whales, there are each baleen, piece of baleen is 100 centimeters.
Wow.
Yeah, so 100 centimeters are 40 inches in length.
Yeah, that's insane.
And there's spaced about...
That's half my body, or more than half my body.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're huge. Yeah. And but then they're spaced about a quarter inch or 1 centimeter apart. And so that helped. So, you know, that's the little critters get trapped in there, and some passes through. So just
Kind of the they're feeding. The one thing I read was like the pleated skin that we talked about underneath that allows them to like expand. So it's almost like it just enlarges this big scoop. I didn't realize how big the baleen was. That's nuts. I did find how much their tongue weighs. Again, one of the factoids. And I'll just give you, I'll go straight to the punchline. Their tongue weighs as much as an elephant. Like, seriously.
That's crazy. Yeah. I have a, like 2.7 tons. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Their feeding behavior is insane. Like that they can survive on krill. And then just to kind of tidy up nutrition, that the adult blue whales can eat up to 4 tons of krill per day.
Yes. That is a lot. 4 tons, I have about 8,000 pounds. And fun Chris, for anybody that's ever watched their waistline to either gain weight or lose weight, I'm always more on the losing side.
Right.
Guess how many calories or kilocalories a day a blue whale eats?
Oh, God.
You can't guess it, but just.
All right.
Just
so we need, let's see, I need about 2,800 or 2,500 roughly per day. I am way underneath a blue whale size, million calories.
You're,
I don't know.
Not bad. Good job.
See, Dr. Chris, right. Dr. Chris is back.
Well, it is the daily energy requirement of an adult blue whale is about 1.5 million kilocalories.
Oh, that's insane. Oh God, that's insane. That's insane. Yeah. I don't know. It's the ocean's an amazing place.
Sure.
Right?
Like we're just at the cusp of it.
Yeah. That's crazy. So I'm really itching to get to this, Angie. I really want to talk about the sounds they make, like whale song. Like everybody loves whale song music.
Oh yeah. I think I have it as an option on my noisemaker for nighttime, right? The whales. Right.
Yeah, for the kids. Yep. Yeah.
I don't ever.
You sound like Dory.
I just say it's a little creepy. I usually go with the rain or the traditional ocean sounds at nighttime. With the whale songs, just a little background is the toothed whales or dolphins, like killer whales or bottlenose dolphins, they use echolocation for hunting and navigating. And that's where they bounce sound waves off of objects to help tell them where their food is, where their prey items are. And I think we discussed that a little bit more in detail, either in Vaquita, and then maybe even in Whale Shark. I'm not
bats.
Sure. Definitely,
bats.
Definitely
yeah,
in
we
bats.
About bats. Yeah.
But blue whales or humpback whales, they generally produce sound, which is termed songs that are used for communicating. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different mechanisms than the echolocation, but it's obviously amazing, and we're just starting to learn about it. But just some quick cliff notes on blue whales and their vocalizations or songs is that they are the biggest animal to ever live, but they're also the loudest.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so they sing at sunset. They can babble in the evening. They can be quiet, or they can basically shout to their buddies 60 miles away.
Yeah, so let me just jump in real quick because
please,
a little bit with Dr. Goetz. Off New Zealand, they were getting the Antarctic blues. They did not think they came up this far north, that, you know, they stay down near Antarctica where all these krill blooms are. And so she's like, we were picking up these blue whale sounds because they are so loud from Antarctica. And so, you know, I'm not going to get too much into it. You got to listen to the interview to kind of figure it out, you know, or listen to what she talks about. But yeah, I mean, talk about loud. Like they can hear them from here.
They've been detected up to 1,000 kilometers away. Mm-hmm. So that is just super impressive.
Right.
And so just recently, they're scientists at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, your old stomping ground.
Ah, La Jolla. Yeah, that's where I grew up. Yeah, Del Mar. What? Chicago? Mm-hmm. No. Del Mar, what?
Yeah, no, it's beautiful beaches there. My old husky dog that I had adopted and rescued, he actually peed on a kid buried in the sand in one of the fancy La Jolla beaches. So
that's funny.
Bless Sinatra's pumpkin heart. The kid was mostly buried in the sand. He
thanks, Angie.
Smelled bad. Whatever.
Thanks for visiting our beaches and letting your dog pee on kids.
Well, it was a dog beach, but it was like a dog and human beach. So it probably, since then it's probably been separated just.
Oh, I know what beach you were at.
You probably
I know what
do. Beach you were at. Yeah, it was gorgeous.
It's called Black's Beach.
Okay.
It's off the, okay. Yeah, that's, it's the clothing optional one. Yeah, I got it.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. Well, I have got me. The husky and I had lots of stuff on. So, so researchers collected more than 4,500 recordings of blue whale sounds taken from the underwater microphones from many locations, like over a dozen locations over 14 years. And they analyzed all of them and they basically have reported that the songs that blue whales make are really special and that they are out of all the whales that have been studied, except for maybe I think the humpback whale, they're some of the only ones that make actual songs, not just notes. They make, they do patterns of four notes at a time, that each lasting 2 minutes. And so it's a phenomenon that's, like I said, it really hasn't been seen in other populations. And it was seen in the, actually the pygmies that you were, that you were talking about. And they think that it's mostly males and that they haven't really heard these four note songs in females, at least at this point, which makes some sense because males are probably doing it for breeding or territorial reasons. And they just don't want to anthropomorphize too much as what exactly the songs mean or how it relates to communication or culture. But they're definitely starting to unravel the mysteries just a little bit besides the fact that you know, they've always known about the distance and that their vocalizations that are much lower decibel than humans talk at. But yeah, they have these low frequency sounds that make them almost like chatterboxes sometimes. And then, and then they have these really beautiful songs that they've recently found too. Chris, here's an example of what a blue whale sounds like. Let me try a different one. Let me try this one. So in that last clip, you can hear the different notes.
Angie, those sounds, it's like, it's haunting. And I want to take a swipe at the movie industry for using whale songs for like scary stuff because I think they were ingrained. But it is beautiful at the same
time.
Really,
it's interesting. So I know. For me, I don't get scary. I get like beautiful, just mysterious. Yeah. I'm a water sign, though. Mm-hmm. I'm an ocean Lake Michigan girl. Mm-hmm. So I just, I like want to, I want to be that four-legged animal that dives in the ocean right. and can just evolve to be right. part of the ocean.
Right. Right.
So for me, it's not, it's just pure beauty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
But there's still so many mysteries to unravel mm-hmm. with the blue whales. And of course, there's simple facts that we know that they can reach speeds of up to 50 kilometers per hour in short bursts if they're wow. interacting with other yeah. whales. But they typically cruise around 20 kilometers or even maybe even a little slower than that sometimes.
What's interesting about the speed is talking to Dr. Goetz, she was saying the reason blue whales weren't like ever hunted before, before modern boats, was because they were too fast. They couldn't catch them.
Mm-hmm.
The old sailing boats, they yeah. couldn't catch them. Yeah.
No, they had to, they started being hunted a little, like you said, after they got more modern boats and more modern harpoons mm-hmm. because of their size and their speed and their power.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, man ended up dominating and then almost wiping them out.
Yeah.
But they're not fast, but they have a pretty decent cruising clip
mm-hmm.
and they can go fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a boat after them or something. And we know that there's social structures that they're more commonly alone, solitary, except for when breeding or mm-hmm. A mother and a calf. And they have been seen congregating in certain areas, mm-hmm. probably where there is a krill or a feeding bloom.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't form really close knit, family groups, which is often seen in some other of the baleen species.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite things that I learned about their behavior, because once again, there's not a ton mm-hmm. known. So one of the fun terms I learned when studying whale behavior, the little bit that was out there about blue whales, is that they do a behavior, or most whales do a behavior called spy hopping.
Mm.
And this is because they have pretty good sight above land.
Mm-hmm.
And so what spy hopping is that it's a maneuver where they rise their eyes above water to investigate what's going on land.
Yeah. Okay.
And then they'll drop back down.
Right.
So into the water. So I just thought that was kind of a funny
thing.
I find myself spy hopping at my boyfriend sometimes. I'm just kidding.
Well, John doesn't listen, so go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's so funny, but so I just thought that just gave me a very cool visual.
This is our new podcast. It's confession time. So we'll just have a confession radio. So like at the deep voice late at night, Angie, okay. I already know you go to Black's Beach in La Jolla. So
yes, I did. I told you about one of the sins of my Sinatra Husky dog. There's many more. Stick with this podcast and you will hear lots of funny stories about that dog.
Yeah, speaking of that, so next was talking about Repro. I'm thinking, how big are these guys?
Well, I
vampire
like your,
squid.
I was gonna say, I like that your mind goes instantly to the gutter, Chris.
Hey,
thank you.
It's what we talk about.
You better believe that my mind's right there with you. I have it documented right here that
I knew it.
Just to sum things up really quick for Repro, the blue whale has the largest penis of any living organism. And
how big? Oh, God. Seven feet? I don't know, 5 feet? Two feet?
Wow. Dr. Chris, you are on top of your A game today with all of your whale facts. It is. Yeah. It's about, it averages in length. It's from 8 to 10 feet.
Jesus.
Or 2.4 to 3 meters.
Stay away from that thing.
Chris, what really fascinated me about the male and his private parts is that length, yes, fine, of course, size is impressive, if you will.
They're so big.
I mean, it makes sense, right? The other thing that's really cool about form and function is that because blue whales are mammals, and mm-hmm. so they're placenta mammals, and they give live birth, and they have to mm-hmm. the male has to inseminate the female internally mm-hmm. when she's ovulating, which we don't know a lot about any of that stuff, so I can't get into mm-hmm. that. But because they're in the ocean and they're these big, large animals, and the male with his tiny little—he actually has long flippers, but he can't hold on to her. Where in a lot of mammal species, the male will.
When they copulate,
When they copulate, the male will physically encourage the female to stay put. And he can't do that. So instead, nature has given the blue whale, and probably most cetaceans, the ability to have a very flexible and almost prehensile-like tail that can basically taper and find its way towards the vaginal opening. And they can also sustain a lot of torque in sweeping movements in the female, perhaps moving. And so it's a very, it's not your average penis, pardon the pun. And which is what, when you're doing that kind of, when you're breeding in the open ocean with all the elements and not able to hold on to your female, it's important to have a very strong and or flexible and agile penis.
Wiener.
Bless his heart.
I mean, we do study repro, so I mean, it's funny, you know, that usually we don't get giggly about this stuff, but thinking about a 10-foot long wiener is insane. Mm-hmm. It's just
but this is what blows my mind. This is all presumption. No one has ever observed mating or breeding grounds and recorded this behavior in the blue whales that I could find. Now, maybe your specialist might know more, and I would love to be. I don't love to be wrong, but if there's ever any facts here, listeners out there, please correct me.
Yeah.
We do make mistakes here and there, but as far as I know, it hasn't been recorded. And so, I think that there's still a lot that we don't know. He might even have, he might even have more tricks up his sleeve, if you will. But we do know that mating is in late autumn and continues to the end of end of winter, depending on the different regions where you live. And sometimes, a second male may try to displace the first male from the breeding female, where they do know that at that point the males will like race each other and get really high speeds. It might even cause blue whales don't typically breach the way breaching means where a whale will jump out of the water and like make large splashes. It's a way to communicate. And blue whales don't typically do that, but sometimes when they're competing with other males for breeding rights of a female, they will do that. And regarding the female, Chris, it's important to note that she does not reach sexual maturity until she's 5 to 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And her gestation period when she is pregnant is 10 to 12 months.
Yeah.
So I guess for her size, I thought that maybe it would need to be longer. But it's really not. However, even though her gestation period maybe isn't as long as, say, the African elephant or whatnot, she produces a big old baby. Do you want to take a stab, a quick guess at how big a newborn blue whale calf is?
300 pounds, which is huge. No, I mean, if a baby horse is 100 pounds or 80 pounds, 400 pounds, 500 pounds, that's still big.
No, not even close.
Back to Chris.
Back to Chris. No, Dr. Chris today, or Dr. Mortensen. It is going to weigh about 2.5 tons or about the size of...
Holy crap.
Just to put in a visual for you, that's a full-grown hippopotamus.
2.5 tons? Oh, God.
Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I thought I had some big babies, right? And they're also, and then with that being said, they're 7 to 8 meters long.
Oh, wow. Wow. So they're big. They're big.
Yeah. They're huge. But interestingly enough, this is a fun one too. A blue whale calf drinks about 100 to 150 U.S. gallons of milk a day.
Wow. Yeah. So, I imagine as big as they are.
Or liters, that's about 380 to 570 liters a day. Mm. But interestingly enough, too, I think we talked about a little bit in our river dolphin section, but an ocean mammal lactating is an interesting phenomenon because they don't really have external teats the way that a normal mammal does. They pretty much just have, they've evolved over time to have what are known as mammary slits, which slits isn't really doing it justice because in a whale, this slit is like 1.5 meters long.
Wow. Yeah. It's so huge.
It's long.
Yeah.
And researchers are still a little unsure about how the calf gets the milk. They might curl their tongue around an internal teat to release the milk, or they might have specialized muscles that actually make the mammary glands con- tracked and squeezed the milk in the mouth.
That's crazy. Yeah.
They don't know. We really don't.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
We don't know. And, but what they, regarding blue whales, they do know that a calf is weaned only after about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, it's doubled in length. But considering the size of the animal, and when we look at other land mammals, that's a pretty quick weaning time comparatively to other animals. But probably that has to do with the milk is tough for the animal to get, and that they would do better on actual nutrients from the ocean. Or, I mean, honestly, researchers don't know. But after six months, the calf will swim off, and it's learned everything it needs to know, and it's away from its mom forever. Yeah, but it's important, too, to note that as we move into the conservation of the blue whale, that their generation interval is about 31 years. So
What?
Yes.
How often do they have calves? Wow.
So they only have calves every 2 to 3 years, we think.
Yeah.
They think.
Yeah.
And so
generation.
Because
it's longer than us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, they take a long time to mature. And then probably, and then of course, locating a male. And
right.
Then,
oh, wow. Yeah.
So that's why this decimation of the whaling industry, that it was halted in around 1966 or early 70s, depending on different countries. I mean, that was what, 40 years ago. And so there has the generation, it takes a long time for them to recover. And we know that they are slowly starting to recover, thank goodness, which is the great news, but it takes a while.
Yeah. And their population is only 3 to 11% of what it was in 1911. That was the IUCN estimates.
Yeah, right. And so just other numbers are that the IUCN estimates that there's probably about 10,000 to 25,000 blue whales today total.
In the whole world.
In the whole world. That's
in the whole world.
In the whole, all the oceans of all the world.
Yes.
But of course, that's a best guesstimate because it's sometimes hard to track these populations. So it could be less. And so the IUCN declares them as endangered.
Right.
But with potentially populations increasing, but once again, not to pre-whaling numbers. And the populations that are left, these 10,000 to 25,000 blue whales, are severely fragmented. And often, sometimes, maybe can't find a mate or have other issues finding food. The largest known concentration of blue whales is 2,800 individuals in the Northeast Pacific population.
Okay.
And those are the ones that are commonly seen in California.
Right. I think it's the Soviet whalers came down here in the Antarctic, and the Japanese, and again, a little bit into Thursday, we talk about this, there has been some illegal harvesting of blue whales that happened. So, looking at conservation, so oceans in crisis. Here we are again, a lot of threats to blue whales. One of the biggest ones, talking to Dr. Goetz, is she was talking about how humans are starting to exploit all the regions around the Antarctic. And that is a major concern. Where humans haven't normally been, now we're there. So you're talking about oil and gas exploration. It's been in the news here in New Zealand. She was talking about...
I was reading about noise pollution.
Noise pollution, yep. Yep. There's a big thing here with Greenpeace, but, New Zealand's just banned oil exploration for a while or put a halt to it until we have more research, because they do a lot of this underwater sonic booms looking for oil.
Right.
Yeah.
As does the military.
Military. Yep. That too. One of the big concerns is this ocean conveyor belt and it's starting to weaken. It's scientists are really, 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 really concerned about it, that if it shuts down, it's game over. It's game over for us and probably many other animals. It just will wipe out a lot of life on Earth. It is so critical to the health of the planet. So what's driving that is climate change. I was prepared today to really hammer hard climate change. In the interest of time, I won't. But there should be no debate. It's human caused. This isn't natural, what's going on. This isn't a natural warming trend. It's never in the history of the planet have we seen carbon, in the last 50 million years. How about that? Since the last mass extinction. And so my conservation tip today is, how can we live a carbon neutral life? I know Angie really hit hard on the plastics. I just was like, okay, what's something new? I think is the first thing we can do is education.
Sure.
And shut down climate change deniers. Telling you, I 100% from the bottom of my heart, I'm a scientist. I don't study climate, no, but I've looked at some studies and the consensus. And when you reach a consensus in science, that is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Yeah. And when 90% of climate scientists reach a consensus and says, this is human caused, this is not natural, this is a problem, the worlds take notice except some politicians.
Well, Chris, you know, and what always fascinates me about the climate change denial is, What's there to deny? If climate scientists are right, we have everything to lose. If they're wrong, what do we have? What harm does it do us to be more carbon neutral?
Be more efficient.
Like that doesn't do. Yeah. Like we don't have anything to lose if we try. If we don't try, we have everything to lose. And that's, I guess, I just don't. Even if you, for whatever reason, are climate change denier or something, or. I mean, why would you, like, what harm is it to work on renewable resources and energy and
preserve habitat?
I just don't understand it. I mean, interestingly enough, I'm sure once the automobile came around, people in the horse and carriage industry were probably pretty bummed and like, oh man,
I'm and upset.
Yeah, they're like, oh man, and they were, but somehow they survived. They decided to, I don't know, go into a different
innovate,
go into a different industry. Maybe they joined the car automobile industry. Maybe they went to the racehorse industry. I don't know, but I don't, you know, the coal and the oil and all these incomes that people are so worried about losing. Mm-hmm. It's like evolve to something cleaner and better.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
And if they won't do it, then it's up to the public, the global, the international public, the world. We share, it's one world, to make them listen, to vote with your dollar. And I don't know. But yes, you're right. We could go on. You and I could go on for days, and maybe someday
I
could do a morning coffee session and just – and wrap, and then we can put it on Patreon if listeners want to hear us go crazy. Yeah.
And even thinking about it is like, we should get a climate scientist or expert and try to research them, because it has such an impact on nature.
Right.
It's really scary. The stuff is really, really scary. There should be no debate. Outside of the U.S., there generally isn't a debate. It's just within the U.S. and financial interests has made it a debate. But looking at this real quick, so my carbon footprint, for most people, 50% of your carbon footprint is produced at your home, and the other is outside of your work.
Correct me if you're wrong, you found a website to help you with your numbers.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm going to do this as fast as I can. I'm going to put the links on the show notes. I encourage everybody to go and calculate your carbon footprint. This blew me away. And I did it for my family. So some of the things like the driving, I took on all the carbon for my wife and my two kids. But, you know, my total household for me was about 0.01 metric tons of carbon a year, which wasn't that bad. This blew me away. I have a hybrid. Mm-hmm. You have a hybrid car. My total car is 2.16 metric tons of carbon a year. I was like, even with a hybrid, I don't even want to know what my old Dodge truck was. Like, even when I was telling Ashley about this, she's like, you're not getting a truck, because I'm thinking about getting a truck. After doing this, I'm not.
But see, even that's honestly a step in the right direction, like, Chris. Like, I love that you went to this website and did this. I can't wait. Please put it on the show notes, because I want to do it ASAP.
To fly from San Francisco to New Zealand, it was 0.77 metric tons of carbon.
So what you're telling me, Chris, is you need to plant some trees. Ashley, if you're listening, for Father's Day out there, go get your husband lots of trees. No, but I know.
So
but
in all seriousness,
I usually do give John a tree. We plant a tree with the boys for Father's Day.
That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, do you want to know how many trees I need to plant? So my carbon output, and that's taken on again three other human beings. You know, the car, the food, all that stuff. So it came out to 17 metric tons for me. Now, if I divvy that up, I'm probably the average, like 7 or 8, you know, if I sign some to my sons and sign some to Ashley. But the average for New Zealand is 7.65 metric tons. The average for the world is 4 metric tons per year. So one tree generally offsets 48 pounds of carbon per year. So for my carbon input, I need 900 trees. Now, just real quick, we're losing 55,600 trees a minute. So that's 2.7 million tons of carbon sink lost every minute. So I was going to have you run some stats and come back to us. You know, that we have 250 births. I looked this stuff up. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I love numbers.
But we have.
Maybe not in this instant.
In the world, I just think this is cool facts. We have 250 births a minute. 100 people die every minute. So we gain 150 people per minute on Earth. So that's 600 tons of carbon gained every minute. And we're losing 2.7 million tons of carbon sink every minute. So I just was like, holy smokes. I'm going to keep this up. I'm going to, again, trying to lead a carbon neutral life. I think that's all of our goals. And we just need to work towards it. But, you know, what are some of the, we're going long. I'm sorry, folks. This is just such an incredible episode, incredible animal. And, you know, you can message us if it's too long. But, you know, what are some of the organizations? Because these ones, I was just, like, again, talking to Dr. Gett here in New Zealand was amazing.
Right. Well, and I think that there is a lot of good being done. And I think you're an example of doing that with looking into your carbon footprint. And I want to applaud you for doing that. And these each little thing we do every day to change our behavior is a step in the right direction. And maybe one tree is not enough, but maybe two are, maybe three are, maybe if everybody did that. And so I think that, no, it's so complex of an issue, we can't change it all right away, but we can all help. And there, regarding blue whale conservation, there's a lot of great things being done. And so my first organization of the week is called the Blue Whale Study. And you can find them on Facebook or at bluewhalestudy.org. And Chris, these are your neighbors. This is Australia's longest running blue whale research program.
Yeah, we love the Aussies.
I know. They do such great stuff. Yeah, and so they're still trying to unravel some of the mysteries of the blue whale. And they basically are committed to the field of natural science. And they do a lot of research on the endangered blue whales. And they work towards studying their movements and migrations so we can learn more about that behavior. Their habitats, what kind of healthy habitat they need to live in order to do all of their behaviors and to be successful, reproductively speaking. And then, of course, their feeding behavior. How much food do they have? Where are these krill blooms? They want to, with all their research, they always like to disseminate their research through scientific publications and conferences, which you and I are big fans of. We love science. And, of course, science, they work locally in the community, too. They do a lot in just local schools. It all starts with the youth. Hey, kids, you guys are going to be those are the kids that are going to save the world. You and I can try, but it's the younger generation that matters. Yeah. And so the Blue Whale Study really hits home and does a lot of local grassroots stuff, which I think is really amazing. And they also have something called the Blue News, which is their it's their newsletter, so they can keep you updated on what kind of research they have going on, how you can get involved. So I think it's a
thumbs up. I gotta subscribe to
I
that.
Know, yeah. I would love to get one of their scientists on here too. I think it'd be fun to talk with them. So kudos to Blue Whale Study. Check them out. And then regarding just citizens in general, there's, of course, a lot of different groups. But what I wanted to focus in on this week, a group I've been tracking for a while, actually since we did dolphins a little bit ago. But this is the American Citizen Society. And they're on Facebook, but they can also be found at www.acsandcatssandsamonline.org. So that's www.acsonline.org. So the mission of the American Citizen Society is to protect citizens, so whales, dolphins, and porpoises, and their habitats. And they do this through public education, research grants, and, of course, conservation actions. And what I really liked about their website is it's very interactive, tons and tons of information about whale behavior projects, sustainable foods that you can eat to help endorse a healthy ocean, and harvesting seafood from the ocean in a healthy, sustainable manner, which I think is really key. Mm-hmm. They have whale watching naturalist programs that you can learn about.
Wow.
Yeah. And you and I are definitely natural born educators. So all you teachers mm-hmm. out there mm-hmm. listening or kids that are in school, they have curriculum for teachers that help students learn more about whales and dolphins and other cetaceans and how to protect them. They mm-hmm. They go to conferences. And they have a newsletter as well. So, great. Yeah. And then, too, if you're really extra into whales and dolphins, you can go out on an expedition with them, helping scientists track their behavior. Yeah. And so, yeah. And once again, a shout out to California, Chris. These guys, the American Citizen Society, yep. they're out of San Pedro, California.
Okay. Hey, that's for my uncle's. We're tuna fishermen.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ago. And this. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. San Pedro. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
It's all of us today. Yeah. So my mom was grew up.
Yeah. And so, and these guys are committed to sound science. So, they obviously believe in climate change and are trying to work on, and helping that situation out. And so, yeah, I think that they have a lot of awesome stuff on their website for somebody who wants to help citizens and they don't really know where to get started or if they want to learn about them.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And the Queen Mary's in San mm-hmm, Pedro, mm-hmm. docked there. So anyways, grew up old home.
It was a really, for me, with the whales, it was definitely California, kind of New Zealand, Australia. Yeah, you guys are doing really great stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and then my last, not conservation group, but my last shout out, since I focus a lot today on plastic, I always want to give people solutions. I know there's tons of problems out there, but I want to give people solutions to the problem. And so there's a group out there called the Plastic Pollution Coalition. They can be found on Facebook, mm-hmm. Of course, on the internet. And they have a goal to reduce plastic pollution and its toxic mm-hmm. impacts on people and, of course, the ocean and the overall environment. And this website is amazing. I spent like an hour of my life on it and just touching the surface of their initiatives that the Plastic Pollution Coalition does. But their big thing is to educate and inform, and then they want to connect people, all parties all parties, communities, environment, public health, government, businesses, policymakers. They connect everybody together globally. They have pledges for people to take action or to skip the straw, as we had talked earlier. Mm-hmm. And what they really focus on are what I call the four R's. And this is a great, great concept.
Right.
So regarding mm-hmm. plastic, they focus on refusing it, reusing it, mm-hmm. reducing it, mm-hmm. and recycling. So, yeah, check them out.
We'll put it all. Yeah, it's funny. You're talking about all this stuff, and I'm like, we have a lot of homework for our listeners. Talk about being educators. We're like, go to this website, go here, and go do the carbon footprint plan. And really, for us this week, what I want you to do, everybody, is do your homework. Go do your carbon footprint and post it on Facebook. Let us know what's your calculation. Yeah, let's come together and as a community of listeners and Angie and I. So I'm going to recalculate mine, maybe just for me. 17 makes me sick to my stomach. See if I'm more of the average, but we, come in there and then let's just discuss ideas. How do we reduce our carbon? What can we do?
Right. Simple, realistic solutions. Cause we're
plastic's
all humans.
A great start. It's a great start.
Absolutely. Skip the straw, man.
It's a great start. Okay. So real quick. This week, Dr. Kim Goetz, another one of my huge conservation crushes now. Her and Allison are fighting for my attention, I guess. Don't let Ashley listen to this.
Oh, lucky ladies.
Oh, God, they're amazing women, though. Doing some amazing work.
Heck, yeah.
Yeah, so she's a U.S. researcher, so she's from the U.S. And she did a tagging study on blue whales around New Zealand, and we talk about that. And she just has some incredible insight. So please listen to that. It was a joy talking to her. And my final shout out is I want to say hello to Tamara. Tamara has been a solid fan since day one.
Hey, so Tamara.
She has been a solid fan. Like every time I go to Twitter, every time I go to Facebook, I've always seen her name pop up. So thank you, Tamara.
Well, she needs to request a species. That should be
there you go. Send us a message. Send us a message. Tell me what you want us to cover and we'll get it done. So, oh God, Ange, this is a long one, but hey, it's amazing. The oceans, blue whales. Next week we'll cover some newt or something that's like 10 minutes.
Yes. Something that I didn't have like 30 slides prepared for. Sorry, guys. If you stuck with
we
us,
love newts. We love newts.
Yeah, no, we love you. We love blue whales. Yep. And we love our oceans, right, too. So let's take care of them.
Thank you. And we'll listen, we'll look for Dr. Goetz's interview, but we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, everyone.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.